Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The conclusion of our investigation into the case of Bianca Jones and DeAndre Lane.
I know a lot of people, you know, say this is going to be like kind of taboo, but a lot of people, you know, when you see a black man in a courtroom and you hear a story, it's easy to convict. It doesn't have to make sense.
Has the person closest to DeAndre committed the ultimate betrayal?
Because she told me what happened. She told me, she was like, look, I went to get questioned by the police. They told me that they were going to take my daughter from me if I didn't say what they wanted me to say. So I said some things that weren't true. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why would you do that?
A statement analysis expert and no-body homicide expert weighs in.
There's just so many, a lot of blatant deceptive indicators that it's very clear to me she was not in that car, or she's in that car, but she was deceased.
And final thoughts and messages from Bianca's mother and DeAndre himself.
I never, ever, ever, not once, gave up on the idea that she would come home.
My dearest Bianca, no amount of time or space can diminish the amount of love I have for you. Even though several years have passed, I want you to know that you haven't been forgotten. There are people who love you. We're still keeping up the search.
The following episode of Killer Jeans contains graphic and sensitive information and material. Listener discretion is advised.
Emmy-nominated true crime journalists bring you cases like you've never heard them before. Hear firsthand accounts from the victims' families, private investigators, lawyers, law enforcement, and even the convicted. Giving you a complete 360 of the case like no one else can.
I'm Melissa McCarty.
I'm Kelly McClear.
And this is Killer Jeans.
DeAndre Lane is convicted of the murder of his 2-year-old daughter Bianca and is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. DeAndre says he was a victim of a carjacking with Bianca inside. We have presented you the facts, the evidence, and even eyewitness testimony that Bianca may in fact still be alive, as her body has never been found.
But there is one other person you have not heard about yet. DeAndre's then-girlfriend, Anjali. DeAndre and Anjali have a daughter together as well, Addison, who is about the same age as Bianca. Anjali took the stand for the prosecution and said that she heard DeAndre beat Bianca and heard her crying. It was this testimony that the prosecution used to corroborate the cadaver dog handler's findings. But not all is what it seems. So you're put on trial for the murder of your 2-year-old daughter, Bianca. What was the most shocking, disturbing, upsetting testimony that you heard?
It was the testimony of my daughter, Addison's mother, who was my girlfriend at the time, because she told me what happened. She told me, she was like, look, I went to get questioned by the police. She was like, and I talked to my family. My family told me to tell them whatever I needed to tell them to get me out of trouble, to make sure me and Addison were safe. They told me that they were going to take my daughter from me if I didn't say what they wanted me to say. So I said some things that weren't true. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why would you do that? Like, you didn't do anything. What reason would they have to arrest you? She's like, well, they said that they will charge me with accessory if they found out that you did something that I didn't tell them. So I told them what they wanted to hear. Now, here it is. This is the woman that lives in my house. This is my girlfriend. You know what I'm saying? This is supposed to be the woman that we're talking about getting married and stuff. You know what I'm saying? This is the mother of my daughter. Why would you do something that would be counterproductive to me finding my daughter, me, or the people out there, you know what I'm saying, finding your daughter's sister? Like, why would you do anything that would be counterproductive to that?
Well, and DeAndre, I would also like to state for the record that I've had conversations with Anjali, and she did tell me that she was coerced into giving a false statement. And the fact is that she heard Bianca that night, or the early morning hours. She full on admitted to me. So I just want the people listening to this to know that this is not just a one side of the story, you know, of you just, you know, saying these things, that she told me these things as well, that she was coerced, threatened with the removal of her child if she did not cooperate with the investigation and say that she did not hear Bianca alive that night. So I'd like to just let people know that she told me that that was a fabricated statement.
Right. She even says, like, she tells him, she's like, you know, I heard her that morning when he was getting her up, you know what I'm saying? I heard her that night, you know. They told her if she changed the statement that she made at the investigative subpoena, that they would charge her with perjury. So here you are further perverting justice.
Yeah.
You threatened the person to get the statement you wanted to get. Then you threatened them with perjury if they changed the statement that you threatened them to get. And her not knowing anything about the law, she's scared. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm upset with her because she would do something like this and how much it is done negatively, you know what I'm saying, against my family and all that. But I understand that she was scared.
DeAndre's defense attorney, Terry Johnson, understands the significance of Anjali recanting her testimony.
They have nothing. Much like they have less than nothing because they had nothing to begin with. They have nothing but the girlfriend, his girlfriend, who basically said, I heard him spank her the night before she died. The only thing that's interesting about that is no one talks about the fact that the girlfriend has pretty much has recanted her statement. And there was a situation where it was being implied to her that if you don't testify a certain way, you have other kids and Child Protective Services may be called. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute, and I want you to think about two different women. I want you to think about the first woman, the mother, who also has other kids, but stands by DeAndre Lane because why? She knows nothing that DeAndre would do would ever harm their daughter. But you've got another mother who basically says, geez, I've got to protect my kids, so I better say what these people want me to say so that I can keep my kids. And if you look at the difference between the two, who would be more credible? Would you have the mother and Benica Jones come forth who's lost a child, who's saying, this man never did it and y'all need to go find the people that did, or the girlfriend that he was currently living with, who was basically told, you got other kids and you really don't want Child Protective Services fishing around you. Who's got the motivation to come to the stand and not tell the truth?
Even Bianca's mother, Pinky Jones, doesn't understand Anjali's words and actions.
The woman came to me and spoke to me on it the day she went down there and opened her mouth and spilled out that whatever. She came right back, left the courtroom and came directly to my house to let me know I just went down there and lied. Why are you telling me? Tell them. Oh, I'm afraid. Bottom line, she was afraid that it would blow back on her and people would be mean to her or she would get in trouble. And I'm like, what do you think is happening to me?
There were other people that witnessed her prior to the trial say that she lied about what she said to the police. Because everybody that they talked to, nobody would ever say that they ever saw me or ever would think of me doing anything like that. Anybody who knows me knows when it comes to children, period, not even my own children, but any child, I'm very overprotective. I don't play no games when it comes to that. I'm not, you know, that's just something I don't deal with. I don't deal with anybody abusing or mistreating a child in any kind of way. Like I've said before, I believe in discipline. I believe in rearing. I believe in teaching. But I don't believe in abuse or anything like that. Never. Never would I do anything like that. Anybody who knows me knows that.
If Anjali told the truth on the stand, would DeAndre have even been convicted? Well, we may never know. I reached out to Anjali again, but received no response back. Anjali appeared on Crime Watch Daily a few years ago and told the real story, that she lied on the stand. But it is not known if the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office was or is looking into it.
And speaking of lies, we wanted to get a different perspective on this case. A perspective from someone who doesn't necessarily need all the facts and evidence to determine if someone is telling the truth or not. Mark McClish is a retired supervisory deputy with the U.S. Marshals Service. During his 24 years there, he did studies on deceptive language and developed the techniques to detect deception in verbal and written statements. His exclusive techniques are the focus of two books, I Know You're Lying, Detecting Deception Through Statement Analysis, and Don't Be Deceived, the definitive book on detecting deception.
We asked Mark to review the interview that DeAndre did with the Detroit Police Department after Bianca's disappearance. But first, he tells us how his techniques work. Can you run through some of the verbiage, the catchphrases that untruthful people use?
Yeah, there's some unique words that I tell people to listen for, and I call them unique because deceptive people like to use these words. And one of them is the word never. It's important to remember that the word never does not mean no. Therefore, you cannot use the word never as a substitute for the word no. But deceptive people, you know, will often do this. You know, did you have a gun when you went to his house? I never had a gun. Well, because it's a negative word, it often fools the interviewer into believing the person is giving a good denial. But it's a very poor denial because by saying I never had a gun, what they're talking about, the word never means not ever. So they're talking about their entire lifetime. Well, I didn't ask you about your entire lifetime. I asked you about this specific date, this specific house. Did you have a gun? And so when people use the word never, you want that light bulb in your head should turn on and take a closer look to see how they used it. If they used it in lieu of the word no, it indicates deception, but you can't use the word never as a substitute for the word no. And we see this, you know, quite a bit. Another unique word I tell people to listen for is the word just. Now, there are several ways you can use the word just. But most of the time when you hear the word just, the person is minimizing things. And when they're minimizing their actions, it's an indication that perhaps they've done more than what they're telling us. Most of the time, you don't need the word just. For example, I just went to McDonald's and came home. Well, the better sentence would be, I went to McDonald's and came home. But by using the word just, they want us to believe that's all they did. That might be a time issue. It was just 5 minutes ago. That's more acceptable. But it's an indication of withholding information, which is pretty obvious. I mean, we don't know what McDonald's they went to, what time they left, how they get there, walk or drive, what route they took. So there's obviously a lot of information that's missing from that simple statement. But we're listening for, you know, the use of the word just. And then I'd mention, you know, verb tenses. When a person is given a statement, everything should be in the past tense. And that's what we'll find when people give us truthful statements. But when they use present tense language, an indication that perhaps it's not coming from memory. And they're making up the story, and they don't realize that they use a present tense verb. Something else we're looking for is pronouns. You can learn a lot by looking at the pronouns in a statement, because pronouns give us responsibility, and sometimes people don't want to take responsibility. And then other times people unknowingly take responsibility, and we see it with the pronouns. Now, we know the pronouns, we and us, are plural pronouns. So when people use these pronouns, we want to know who else was involved. But what people don't realize is that the pronouns we and us always indicate a partnership. It means that two people agree to do something together. It doesn't mean they're best of friends. The pronoun I shows commitment to that statement. You know, got up at 6 o'clock, went to the store. Well, who did all that? It wasn't I got up at 6 o'clock or I went to the store. So the missing I shows us a lack of commitment to that statement, and perhaps the person didn't do what they want to believe they did. The order in which people mention things. And so we can gain a lot of information by the order that people mention things. You know, we saw each other on and off. It probably wants to believe they didn't see each other very often, but look at the order. On is first, off is second, versus most people would say we saw each other off and on if it was very infrequently. And so sometimes we can gain some additional information. We can detect deception, you know, by looking at the order a person mentions things. So those are just a few things, you know, we want to look for when we're analyzing a statement.
Talk about the significance of being repetitious. You know, in the very beginning, the detective says, tell us where baby girl is. And DeAndre over and over says, I don't know where she is. I don't know where she is. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Why are
Why are repetitious statements possibly suspicious?
Well, they're suspicious because why is the person saying this over and over? Is it an effort to try to convince us they're being truthful when they're not? So that's what we're thinking about. I mean, truthful people usually, they'll just put it out there. This is the truth. This is what happened. I don't have to keep repeating myself. It is, you know, it's one of the times when he does give a good statement. I don't know where she is, because again, we believe what people tell us, and that's a good statement. But as you pointed out, he kind of messes it up, because I think it was seven times he said that. I don't know where, I don't know. And so the repetitious then makes it a more suspicious. Are you being truthful or just trying to convince me, you know, that you don't know where she is? A deceptive statement usually lacks a lot of details, because if they're making it up, there was no details. And so deceptive people usually don't think about putting details in there. If they're smart, the shortest answer is going to be the best answer, because then they don't get tripped up. But there's a reason why you keep saying that over and over again. And again, we're not going to send him to prison because of that, but it's just something we want to take a look at, ask a few more questions about. Is he trying to convince me he's overdoing it, or is he being truthful here?
During DeAndre's interview with detectives, he recounts his movements that morning, and Mark picked up on something. He said, "I stopped at the gas station while I had Alondra in the car, so I couldn't run into the gas station." So if you would, break down this particular sentence.
So again, the sentence was, "I stopped at the gas station, and while I had Alondra in the car, so I couldn't run into the gas station." So what he wants us to believe is that I stopped and got gas, but my other daughter's in the car. I can't go into the gas station because, yeah, she could be kidnapped, could be carjacked, what have you. excuse me. And I would say, okay, that sounds like a good statement. Good reason for not going to the gas station. But again, notice what he says. The reason he couldn't go into the gas station is because he had Alondra in the car. Well, what about Bianca? Suppose at this point in time, Alondra and Bianca are both in the car. And so we'd expect him to say, "I had both my daughters in the car. That's why I couldn't go into the gas station." But he doesn't talk about Bianca, which indicates she wasn't in the car. Or if she was deceased, then, you know, you wouldn't really think that's a concern. But his other daughter, Alondra, is still alive. So that is a concern. And so, yeah, Ray, it stood out to me because, you know, it should be both my daughters are in the car. That's why I couldn't go into the gas station. But he just focuses on Alondra and doesn't mention Bianca.
Detectives asked DeAndre to tell them about the carjacking.
So when talking about the carjacking, the detective says, "Don't make any more mistakes, Dre." And Mr. Lane says, "I already did. I got out of the car and I let them take." And he stops.
The phrase "I let them take" is what jumped out at me. It's obviously, it's a phrase that indicates he was at fault here for his daughter being kidnapped. And we can see how a person might say that, you know, had I not stopped the car and got out and just said, okay, I'll just keep driving. When I get to my destination, then I'll look at my taillights. This wouldn't have happened. So yeah, there is some fault on his part, but still, you know, an innocent person wouldn't make a statement like that. You know, I let them take. And what he wants us to believe is, I let them take her. They would, you know, they would be distraught and, you know, what could I have done to prevent this and stuff like that. But the other point is that he didn't finish the sentence. You know, I let them take what? He couldn't say, I let them take her. Well, why can't he say that? That's what we want to know. Well, it could be because he's so upset, it's hard for him to say that. Or it could be because it didn't happen. You know, nobody took her. And so he can't say, I let them take her. And again, I think, you know, that he's making up the carjacking. Nobody took her, and that's why he couldn't say, I let them, you know, take her.
And then another concerning section was, I told y'all everything that happened. I don't understand why. I'm truly telling y'all everything, how it happened. I swear I'm telling you everything, how it happened.
Yeah, again, we have him using some words to indicate untruthfulness. You know, truly, I swear. And what we're looking for there is, how often does it appear? Some people have a habit of using those phrases all the time. as I mentioned earlier, if the subject senses the interviewer doesn't believe him, that may cause the subject to start using these phrases then, because they are being truthful and you're not believing me. So I have to kind of emphasize it now that I'm being truthful. And so it's still definitely a red flag. Take a closer look at it. But it could be he used those words because he knows at this point in time they're not believing his story. And so he feels like he's got to put it in there. Then again, he could be putting it in there because he's trying to convince them that I'm being truthful, even though he's not being truthful.
And then following that, DeAndre Lane says to the detective, "I don't blame y'all for accusing me." What does that say to you?
It's a statement we don't hear very often. It's a very unusual statement. You know, "I don't blame y'all for accusing me." Well, why is that? Is it because of, you know, the way I'm acting? Is it because of my criminal history, my past? And so, you know, that's what I would ask. If he made an utterance like that, I would say, well, you know, why do you feel that way?
The word blame concerns me, because is that showing a sense of weakness maybe, or guilt, or I'm not blaming you because I did do this? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is troublesome, the word blame. We don't really have a confession here in this statement, but it's just an odd statement to make. Most people wouldn't make it. There's a reason why he said it. And again, it might be because he just feels like he's, you know, the finger's being pointed at him based on his background, his race, and other officers' comments about him.
Earlier in the interview, as DeAndre is telling the detectives about the night of December 2nd, morning of December 3rd, Mark points out a possible clue that DeAndre is showing deception.
You brought up the significance of using numbers, and DeAndre used a number when referring to what time he put her to bed. Can you explain?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, when deceptive people have to come up with a number, they will often use the number 3. Now, not always, but if you hear the number 3 or any use of the number 3, as in like, you know, 30, 300, 3,000, you just want to ask a few more questions about to see, is it an accurate number? Now, if people don't know the number, and I see this all the time, even on television, if they're just estimating, they'll use the number 3. Oh, it's 3 minutes ago or 30 seconds ago or 3 hours, what have you. Not being deceptive, but they don't know the exact number. And so when Lane talks about, he says, "I put her to bed, not with me, I put her to bed about like maybe 3:30. And so he uses the number 3 there, not just 3 o'clock, but 3:30. And so I'd ask a few more questions about that. Now, again, it could be he doesn't know the exact number, because he did say about like maybe. And so he's not saying it was exactly 3:30, and maybe that's why he went with that number. But it does raise some questions, because, you know, deceptive people like to use that number 3.
So, Mark, in your professional expertise, with DeAndre's interview on December 3rd of 2011, you feel that he was being significantly deceptive?
I believe he's being significantly deceptive based on his language, what he's telling us, more so what he's not telling us. I believe that Bianca died probably the night before. I'm not sure how, if she fell out of bed or he did something to her, but that when he put her in the car that morning, she was already deceased. He covered her up with a blanket. He never uncovered her. He wants us to believe he did, but he didn't. And then he alludes to, you know, talking to her, or alludes to what she was acting like, but he always stopped short of saying it because he couldn't say it. You know, Rico says he didn't see her. I believe that she was deceased after he dropped his 2 kids off at school. He then apparently would dispose of her body, parked his car, and then, you know, ran to Mary's house and make it look like a carjacking. There's just so many deceptive indicators. You know, if there was just one or two, that's different. Maybe not enough to conclude, okay, I think he killed his daughter. But there's just so many, a lot of blatant deceptive indicators that it's very clear to me she was not in that car, or she's in that car, but she was deceased.
What separates the conviction of DeAndre Lane in the murder of his daughter, Bianca, is the fact that her body has never been found. No body homicide cases are more prevalent than you think. So we consulted this country's leading expert on the matter.
Tad DeBias, once a prosecutor in the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office for 12 years, is now known as the Nobody Guy, as he has consulted legal teams around the country on nobody homicide cases. He is the author of Nobody Homicide Cases, A Practical Guide to Investigating, Prosecuting, and Winning Cases When the Victim is Missing, and runs the website nobodycases.com.
So the old saying of no body, no crime, criminals can't use that anymore, can they?
Correct. It's a lot harder. It used to be true. In fact, there used to actually be some jurisdictions where if you didn't have the body, you couldn't charge someone with murder, New York and Texas being the biggest examples of that. But in fact, my research has shown there have been no-body murder trials in all 50 states, all of the territories of the U.S. So that really puts a lie to the idea of no body, no crime.
So what is the formula that you're looking for? What boxes are you checking off?
In a no body murder case, you have what I call three legs of a stool. In a good case, you have all three legs. In a not so great case, you don't have any of the legs. But the three legs of the stool are, number one, forensic evidence. So that's DNA, blood, hair, fiber, fingerprints. It could be computer forensic evidence, cell tower information, some type of recordings, information from a cell phone that tells you who the people spoke to. The next leg of the stool is confession to friends and family. Most no-body murder cases are done by single defendants against another person, and they're generally are not eyewitnesses. There are some cases where there are eyewitnesses, but the vast majority of cases don't have eyewitnesses. And the third leg is confession to police, where the defendant at some point confesses to the police. A good nobody case might have all three of those. There are cases that go to trial and conclude successfully that don't have any of those three. Those are rare. Most of the cases have one of those, what I call quantum of evidence.
And how many legs of the stool did you find for DeAndre Lane?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let me think about that.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Tad, he never confessed to law enforcement.
Correct. He never confessed to law enforcement. Right. I don't think he confessed to friends and family.
No.
So I think both of those are out. I would call he had the dog, the canine hit, correct?
Yes, correct. Yeah, the only piece of really substantial evidence was a dog barked. That was it.
Right. So I would call that forensic evidence, although, as I think you've kind of alluded to a little bit with your comment, I think that's definitely a little bit of a weaker strand of forensic evidence. It's obviously not the strength of DNA. It's not the strength of even a fingerprint, which sometimes takes some hits. It's probably not even as ironclad as hair, which is really taken a lot of forensic hits the last few years in terms of being challenged. A dog smell is something, but the problem is if you don't actually find the body, it's a little bit hard to tell for sure. This is definitely what the dog smelled, that it was a decomposing body, because as anyone who works with canines will tell you, there are other things that can smell like that. That are not a decomposing body, but smell like a decomposing body. And obviously, the biggest drawback of a dog is the dog can't tell you, this is what I think it is, I'm 60% sure, I'm 100% sure. That relies on the ability of the handler to be able to tell what the dog is indicating on. So I would say in the Lane case, that's really the only leg of a stool. And as is evident when you have only one leg of a stool, it can be a shaky stool, and I think that applies here, given that the type of forensic evidence we're talking about is really kind of shaky, because even if you had found Bianca's DNA in the car, it wouldn't have told you much, because he had obviously transported his daughter in that car before.
So why do you think the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office
took the chance. I mean, with lack of, you know, significant physical evidence in this case, to me, it just seemed like it was a roll of the dice.
I will say all prosecutors really have to be convinced that they have a better than 50% chance of winning a case, which means proving it beyond a reasonable doubt. That's kind of an ethical obligation that I know applies to federal prosecutors. I assume something very close to that applies to state level. So they must have believed that they had a better than 50% chance of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, all I can say is if I look at this in the pantheon of nobody murder cases, it's definitely on the weaker side of evidence.
Were you surprised that the one leg they had for a trial ended with a conviction?
I can't say I'm ever surprised, because I think every jury trial is different. And I try to be very careful about relying on just what I read in the newspaper. And sometimes you don't necessarily know everything that happened at a trial. So I think I have to be cautious about that, particularly on a case that I was not involved in and did not work on. All of that said, this is definitely a weaker nobody murder case than a lot that I've seen. I remember thinking at the time, like, ooh, boy, there's not a ton of evidence here. This isn't a huge, this isn't an overwhelming case, which is rare, because for the most part, nobody murder cases have an 88% conviction rate, which seems very counterintuitive, because we spend all this time telling people these cases are difficult, it's hard to get a conviction. So, of course, you say, well, wait a second, Tad, why is it 88% when your run-of-the-mill murder case is about 71%? So a nobody murder conviction is significantly higher than a regular murder conviction. And that's because prosecutors, and to a lesser extent police, only take a strong nobody murder case to trial because the defense is so obvious if you don't have a strong case. And it's either, you know, this person isn't even dead, how do we know he or she is dead? And two, if we even concede the person is dead, you don't have enough proof to show my client did it. So it is rare to see difficult nobody murder cases, you know, go forward to trial.
As you know, the case against DeAndre did go to trial, and he was found guilty of child abuse and the murder of his 2-year-old daughter, Bianca. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Well, tell me what that moment was like to hear you being found guilty of the murder of your 2-year-old daughter, Bianca.
I mean, it was heartbreaking. And I did everything I could to stay strong in that moment, because, like I said, I didn't want to show weakness. I didn't want them to feel like the prosecution or these people who were lying on me. Just, I didn't want anybody to feel like they had defeated me. But it literally killed me inside, because I know that this wasn't right. And I know what this meant, you know, and I know what my conviction meant, that nobody was going to be out there looking for me. You know, my conviction meant that they could just square this away and put it in a box somewhere and leave it there. And nobody was going to actually be searching for the truth. You know, a lot of times it's not about what's right or what's wrong in the legal system, especially for, you know, somebody like me. It's about another conviction. And I knew that that's what was going to happen if they found me guilty. And when they did, it was just like a feeling of hopelessness. We're still trying to find
you have 1 minute remaining.
We know she's still out there, and we want her to come home. And them trying to be guilty hindered that.
Okay.
It was heart-wrenching. It was painful, like a part of me broke inside, but I couldn't express it. I couldn't show it.
In September of 2012, DeAndre filed an appeal to have the cadaver dog testimony thrown out. He lost that appeal. And what else was lost was a little girl in the family that has been left behind. Is Bianca dead? Or is she still alive out there somewhere?
All right, DeAndre, I'm going to ask you these questions then. Did the carjacking take place?
Yes, it did.
Did you kill your 2-year-old daughter, Bianca?
No, I did not.
Do you feel that she is still alive out there somewhere?
Yes, she is. I know. It would be any reason for them to take her if they weren't trying to keep her.
So what do you think happened to her?
I feel like she was abducted. I feel like I was targeted and she was abducted. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of why she was abducted, who did the abduction, where she is now, but I truly believe that that situation, I was targeted and they got what they wanted.
DeAndre's defense attorney, Terry Johnson, has his own theories. Do you believe Bianca is alive?
I do. I do. I believe that little girl is alive.
Do you think DeAndre was set up? If so, by who and why?
I have my theories. I prefer not to go into it at this point. I think that he was set up, and I think things just went wrong after the police and everyone else were involved. I believe he was set up, and he didn't know he was being set up at the time. I've gotten several tips that I've followed up on myself. I do have a few theories. I firmly believe that, you know, Miss Jones, Miss Bianca Jones is alive, and I pray that she surfaces some way, somehow. And, you know, I'll be the second happiest man on earth, I promise you, once Mr. Lane gets out of prison for this.
DeAndre's nephew, Trevion, also believes Bianca is alive, and he has a message.
My message is simple. If anybody knows something, if they know anything significant about this case or about Bianca, they know anything, can they come forward? Can they, you know, help us? You know, we got an innocent man in jail right now, and man, our family, man, we miss him, and I miss my little cousin. We need some closure, and I pray that we can get closure from all of this, man. I know that my uncle's innocent, and I just pray that we can get this word out there and whoever knows something can come forward.
Nikki Gibbs is no longer with the Detroit PD, but she continues to help DeAndre and his case in any way she can. In your heart of hearts and in your law enforcement experience, do you firmly believe that you saw Bianca Jones alive 10 days after her abduction? And do you believe that DeAndre is innocent of her murder?
I firmly believe I saw Bianca Jones 8 days after her supposedly death. And I firmly believe DeAndre is innocent. I would not be talking to you. I mean, I would have let this go. But this has been embedded in my heart since 2011. You don't let something go when you know there's an injustice in our system. I wouldn't have done that. I put myself on a line. I truly believe Bianca's alive.
For Pinky Jones, since 2011, the days have run into months, the months into years. And there is not only one person missing in her life, but two. The man she has known since they were kids and the daughter they have together. And you firmly believe that DeAndre Lane is an innocent man serving life in prison.
I know it. With everything in me, I know it. I know this is injustice. I know it. I know it happens all the time, every day, to people all over the world. And a lot of times people go their whole life and they never see it rectified. They never see justice done. They never see right, wrong And I just hope so hard that this is not the case for us, that we one day will get the chance to vindicate ourselves, to stand there with our daughter and say, see, we loved her and we never stopped looking, and she is home with us where she belongs.
Bianca would be turning 11, correct?
Yep.
If she is out there, and either she's listening or somebody she's with is listening, what message do you have for Bianca right now?
I never, ever, ever, not once, gave up on the idea that she would come home. I moved out of the old house, but I only moved a block away, so we still close. You can still find home. I'm across the street from the park. I got us a big yard. We got a nice garden, and we can get a dog if you want. Home is waiting for you, baby. Whenever you get here, it is waiting. It's always going to be here for us. Always, because I want home to always be here for her when she come home. Whenever she get home, I wanted to be here.
Okay, so let's run down the list, DeAndre, right? Let's run down the list, okay? You've got your nephew, Travion, that says Bianca was alive that morning. You have Damien saying he saw her alive that morning, and he said he is 1,000% sure it was that morning. Then you have Ms. Gibbs, who saw her 8 days later. You have Mike Salisbury, who claims to have seen her, 8 months later? You have Anjali, which was supposed to be the corroboration for the cadaver dog, recant her statement. Your clothes have no scent of decomp on them. So if you were supposed to be transported body, where is that scent?
And remember, the prosecution, according to the prosecution story, is that I beat my daughter bloody. So there's no smell of decomposition, and there's no blood or anything like that on my clothes either. And these are the same clothes that I was wearing that night.
You have a ski mask that was found and never tested. You have no fingerprints in the car anywhere. And you have different shoe prints, different shoe prints that were walking away from the vehicle than the ones you were wearing that morning.
Right.
Why do you think the jury convicted you?
I mean, you know, honestly, and this is, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, say this is going to be like kind of taboo, but a lot of people, you know, when you see a black man in the courtroom and you hear a story, it's easy to convict. It doesn't have to make sense. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times this happens. Often, then a lot of people care to admit. And nobody cares at the end of the day. It happens all the time.
For DeAndre, who spends his days at the Michigan Department of Corrections, he has missed weddings, birthdays, and the deaths of loved ones. But what he misses most is his daughter, Bianca. DeAndre wrote a letter to Bianca if she's listening.
My dearest Bianca, no amount of time or space can diminish the amount of love I have for you. Even though several years have passed, I want you to know that you haven't been forgotten. There are people who love you. We're still keeping up the search, making sure we do everything to keep this event relevant and in the minds of the people. Someday soon, you'll make it back to us. I can only hope that wherever you are, you're safe and being taken care of. Even though we have many fears about the circumstances of your abduction and disappearance, we have faith and love. That faith and love keeps us hopeful. I have so many things to tell you. There are so many milestones that we've missed, and countless others still to come. Dream of you often, and in those dreams, we are back at home together as a family. You're my beautiful, happy daughter, and I'm an overprotective father. Your siblings miss you as well. They're always asking about you. want to do whatever they can to bring you back home. Just the other day, your little brother was telling me how he wanted to be a police officer and a judge so he can make people look for you to bring us home. You are loved more than you know. Words can never express how much we love and miss you. They can never express the pain we felt when you were taken away. And they won't be able to express the joy that we'll feel when you're finally back home. I love you, baby, now and forever.
Pinky has created a change.org petition. She and DeAndre are asking the governor and attorney general of the state of Michigan to review his case and overturn his conviction. With the help of Miss Nikki Gibbs, Pinky and DeAndre have submitted the case to various innocence groups and organizations, hoping for any kind of help.
Attorney Terry Johnson continues to follow up on leads as they come in, and Pinky always does a double take when she sees a young girl that could be Bianca.